Hello and welcome back to The Wine Club, episode 13. Today we speak to Rachel Sherlock of the Keep Rolling Company, a female-led skateboard media, skateboarding media company. I've been a massive follower and fan of Rachel since I met her around 2016 at the Unicorn Skate Jam. Rachel's worked for the likes of Skateboard GB, ITV, and she's got a massive background in media in general, without the skateboarding part. So enjoy this conversation, in-depth conversation about camera gear, traveling, and skateboarding. Enjoy.
Who are you guys working for?
Who is this?
It's Skatewine.
Oh, beautiful. Did you say Skatewine?
Yes, sir.
Welcome to the podcast, Rachel, episode 13. I've not even introduced you. I'm really sorry. That was really, really bad of me.
So what, you can fix everything in the edit.
I might have to.
Oh, hello.
And you have to go back and be like, this is totally professional.
If there's anyone that understands, it's me.
Straight away, I've managed to forget this question, the icebreaker question I've managed to put at the end of the last three podcasts, I think. So my icebreaker question to you, do you drink alcohol, first of all?
Occasionally.
Just falling down.
My microphone. Oh crap. Only that first Zoom call you did worked.
If you were a beverage, if you went to a bar and you ordered yourself as a beverage, what kind of beverage would you be? And my preference would be to a wine bottle in fitting with the podcast.
A weak one. No, a beverage. Well, I've always known or been told that Long Island iced tea, I don't enjoy it, but it's just falling apart, has the most alcohol for like your money's worth. So depending on my budget, I'd go with that if I need to. Yeah. But we do. Yeah. That's how we travel so cheap, is we don't really drink much.
Yes. And I was going to say, are you sorting out that poster in London today?
Yes, what this one here.
Yeah,
I'm in London and I tried to make this display backdrop. I know it's a podcast, but I know you also have like YouTube so people can see. And this is Aurora's wardrobe. Aurora is the also co-founder of Keep Rolling and my partner. And yeah, and it's been good for the past 3 hours, but I was waiting so long for you to wake up. It's just all falling apart now.
I apologize. I forgot it's 7 hours. They don't change the clocks in Mexico anymore.
I know. But that's probably good. I think we're one of the only, well, the closer you get to the equator, like they don't need to change anything, but yeah.
I'm pleased that you said about Keep Rolling, because I was going to ask you to introduce yourself and what you do.
Ah, so how to keep it really short with Keep Rolling.
Go as long as you want.
Okay. For ages, I'd always volunteered with other companies, charities and things like that, and done a lot of work for free for other people's community projects. And it just got to a point where it just made sense to create our own company. So we are a community interest company, which is a SIC, which is supposed to make it a bit easier to apply for grants. Many people don't know, but Keep Rolling is a pun on rolling film. So we're skateboard and media orientated, and the idea is predominantly female representation. So, you know, in skateboard magazines, you don't see many girls, but you also don't see much content that's created by women either. So as well as getting more girls on boards, like running female only workshops along with like mixed sessions, there is a huge focus from us on trying to find where the girls are in the world, shoot with them, and just do something with the content, which is hopefully going to be a little mini documentary series.
Oh, brilliant. How long have you been doing it for?
It was made official in the lockdown. I think because, you know, everyone had all that time to just waste. In the lockdown. But the great thing about that was coming out of the lockdown, I think we ran the first women's event in London out of the lockdown. And it was much needed because before lockdown, Nike SB were doing the Girls' Night at Bay 66. So it was free to enter. during the lockdown, that fizzled out, went away. They haven't come back. But so many more girls took up skateboarding during the lockdown. And so I think we did our first event in collaboration with the Silver Building in East London. And it was definitely worth it, like setting it all up. And we got off to a good start.
So you're based in London then?
Yes, we are based in North London, but I was born in Bristol, and I'll represent a lot Clevedon, which is a little town in Somerset.
Just outside.
Yeah, and near Portishead. People know Portishead because there's a band named after them. But they have a skate park that is just about to open, hopefully next month. They've been trying for decades, but there's posher people that live in Portishead that have always blocked, you know, always blocked the skate park. So between Somerset and London.
That's amazing. I didn't realise this. So have you got family in Somerset then?
Yeah.
And are you going to the Portishead Jam?
Yeah, do you have a date?
There's a seismic alarm. Sorry about that.
Oh.
I'm going to ignore it and hope there's not an earthquake. I might. It's quite close to me. I'm moving back to North Devon, so it should be about an hour and a half drive.
Oh, yeah. You can come up the coast.
Come and say hello. So you're going to cover that then, are you?
Hopefully. I'm not sure if they've set an opening date, but if I'm here, I'd definitely love to be there. And if not, I'll probably schedule some like half-term taster skateboard sessions or something. It's actually better in Clevedon because even though they have a really crappy, unmaintained skate park, there's some flat ground, and it's always good to like just bring a couple of your own wooden ramps and get them started on flat ground. Because you don't want to take a big group into a skate park for their first time on a skateboard. It's not necessary.
Yeah. And I think a massive part of skateboarding is just rolling. Well, keep rolling. It's rolling forwards. And I often forget as a transition skater that actually just skating flat ground. I mean, some people just skate flat ground. It's just so fun.
So the thing for me and Aurore is when we were growing up, there really weren't any facilities in our hometowns. I did, as part of the local youth club that got the Clevedon skate park built, but that happened like towards the end, just as I was about to stop skating. So yeah, flat ground was all we had, or like Aurore used to like play the Rodney Mullen VHS and like pause it and then run down to her garage and then, you know, do some tricks and then have to run back upstairs to press play again for the next bit. We, especially Aurore, she is a firm believer that people need to learn to push before they go in the skate park. Because kids, they see the transition, they're like, they want to learn how to drop in. And if you just learn to cruise around, do a couple of little hill bombs and things like that before, that's going to come really easy and quick. And you're going to take probably less slams if you learn to push first.
Where did you start skateboarding then? Did you grow up in Somerset?
Yeah, in Somerset.
I didn't realise this.
Yeah.
I'm a massive fan of Somerset. I went to uni there and I love Somerset. I love cider. I went to Taunton.
Taunton. Yes. I used to play rugby in Taunton. Ah. Could have put a few of those awards behind me. What was I going to say about Clevedon? Yeah, I've been trying to put a date on when I started because I actually am not sure. But it's around the time of Jackass. I think it's like CKY, Bam Margera, and the first Tony Hawk's Pro Skater game. There was a kid down my street called Ross who got a flip skateboard. And I can remember then my mum got me like a Sports Direct board or something really crappy, and I can remember him teaching me how to like level an ollie, and then we just used to like make our own ramps and have my parents owned a catering company, and we'd use their like bread trolleys and stuff to like throw ourselves over the ramps, and that was about it, just trying to be jackass.
I didn't realise that this similar generation then, because I grew up on Jackass and Dirty Sanchez, and I think that happened and it was in like commercial TV, and then it seemed to like peter off, and then it got a lot more serious, I think, with like Nike coming in and more of the bigger brands, and then there was less like playfulness. I mean, Jackass and Dirty Sanchez were probably a bit to the extreme of playfulness, but the playfulness seemed to disappear.
Yeah, I completely agree with that. They definitely weren't serious times in my life, but now that I've moved to London and I've met the OGs, like obviously Danny from Girl Skate UK, Jenna Selby, Georgie Winters, Sam Bruce, knowing that they all had this community going on and they were like, I'm going to cry about it now, traveling around to competitions. I knew none of that. I remember going to a skate park in Western Supermare, because as I said, we didn't have a skate park. And I did I learned my first rock and roll there. And some kids came up to me and they were like, gave me an Osiris sticker. And they were like, oh, you're so sick. Do you know this other girl, like Lucy Adams? And I was like, no, who's Lucy Adams? And they like told me there was this girl that was really sick called Lucy Adams. And then that name had stuck in my head. Hadn't seen anything. I had a subscription to Sidewalk magazine, but not every year. So it never crossed. If Lucy was in it, then I didn't see her. And then eventually, like in my 20s, I made it to London at the Unicorn Skate Jam and saw this Lucy Adams. And I was like, shut the front door. This is her. And I had my photo. I asked for my, asked if I could have my photo taken with her. And I think it was her wife who I didn't know anyone else. Like, I didn't know anyone there. And I think her wife jokingly said, like, oh, don't you want a photo with me? And I was just like, I don't know who you are. But now I know. I think it was her wife. It could have been someone else, but I was oblivious. Yeah.
Whether you remember, but that was the first time I met you, was at, I believe Danny ran the Unicorn Skate Jam. And I went along when I lived in Peterborough in 2015, 2016.
You came to a girls' jam. No,
I did, yeah.
Did you come to win with a wig?
No, I didn't. I came to just cover it with skate wine, which I didn't need because Danny was there with her camera. It was an eye-opener, I think, for me at the time, because something you pointed out about being in Clevedon is you usually have, excuse the language, but you usually have a token female skater and there's not usually a crew. Whereas, I mean, how has skateboarding changed for you since you started and now?
I think the main difference has come from after COVID. Because pre-COVID, like Bay66, Girls Nights was still kind of like the same crew and the same people. Like there'd be some people that would turn up like trying some lessons with Gary, and then you'd kind of like never see them again. But now I think that, like, in terms of younger generation as well, there's so many of them, and it's amazing. Like the level is so good. I was shooting the national champs this weekend. I'm excited to see I'll be there again in 2 weeks for the street. The thing I will say about the national champs is there are a lot of capable skaters with high levels, like female, but they're not interested in competitions, and that's absolutely like fine, you know, that's their preference. But I think it's hard to get a true representation of where the level for the women are in the street, especially. Bowl is really popular. There was like three different runs for Park. There's still six, because sometimes I think, oh, we don't need like extra funding or anything because like it's pretty equal. But then you look at it and you think, oh, there were six heats for the men and only three for the women. So if you think, that's still double the amount of everything. And I think for the street, there's going to be even less. There'll probably be like maybe one or two heats if we're lucky.
I think in comparison to male skateboarding, especially when I was younger, there was this core, I'm too cool for skateboarding competitions, I just get footage, I don't do the frat kind of thing. And I think that's especially been pushed now with the Olympics. And I think it's sad because it's, for me, a competition is a celebration of how good you are. Like like when I went to SLS and you've got Andy Anderson doing the most silly tricks and only getting a four.
I love him. I love him so much, yeah.
And I just think that people have to look past that I'm too cool for a skateboarding competition. So I don't know whether it's necessarily something that's different between the sexes with regards to how many people turn up for skateboarding competitions, because that was something I was surprised about when I was younger. You'd hear about these people in Sidewalk and then you go to NAS and they wouldn't be entering the competition. They'd only be getting footage.
Interesting. I'd say, especially with the women, like at least the men have the footage option if they don't go down the comps route. I think with the women, like there's just... The women that do SLS, you'll rarely see a street part from them. Is it Fabio just put one out, which is sick. But yeah, and especially for like UK and European skateboarders, like we've got a few in the world champions and stuff like that now. Obviously, there's Candy Jacobs and more. But yeah, if they're focusing on the competition, then I'd say they don't have the time to be making the...
That's
like
true.
The video parts, and there's just not enough video parts. Aurora wants to change that.
I guess it's time as well. You either put your time into making a part or you put your time into practicing at a skate park for competitions, which I've not thought about either. So you mentioned a number of skaters in London that you've met since you started. When you were in Clevedon, who was your like inspiration, or who did you look up to when you were skateboarding? Like, why did you start skateboarding?
That's a good question. I loved skateboarding. Definitely Bam Margera was a big influence, because I remember my mum having to ring a shop, because there was no, like, there was some dial-up internet at the time, but not like we have now. And so my mum, like, found like a number for a skate shop in America. I had to ring them up, ask them, do you have a BAM Day element board? The pink one, that's the one with the bomb. And then she had to pay over the phone for them to send it to me. And I was still relatively new to skateboarding, so I wasn't aware of, like, I think my board was like 7.75, and it was for a long time. And the board came and it was like 8.5 or something. Like, fuck. And I put it on with my tiny little trucks and I skated it for a couple of times, and then it just had to like go on the wall because I'd made a mistake. And that's the problem, like, it'd come all the way from America. We couldn't send it back and get another one. It was too much faff. But I skated with boys from my school. There's a tiny little video of me on a boy's YouTube called Ollie Hind. He had the kind of like the only camera back then, and we would skate up at the secondary school, and I kickflipped a two-set. I've never kickflipped a two-set since. Never kickflipped anything since. And I said, I'm going to do it, and I just did it. But it's this really horrible down kickflip. So I had all these...
Yeah, they're hard.
Yeah. I had these, like, flick down kickflips, and I've just had to relearn how to kickflip, basically, and I'm still trying.
What size board have you got now?
Now I'm on like 8.12 or something like that.
It's
just an 8.8.
Still quite narrow.
Yeah, but I went up really slowly. Like, that's only in like the past year that I think I've moved to an 8. I lost my pop shove-its when I moved to an 8. But
it's harder for street. When you've got a bigger board, it's harder for street, definitely. What's your favourite thing to skate? Because I believe when I was at the Unicorn Skate Jam, I was super impressed with your transition skills.
No, I'm really rubbish at transition.
No.
I'm going to argue. So I'm scared of heights, and I learned every trick but rock to fakie for like years because I didn't like the idea of coming back, like coming in backwards.
Yes.
So like I could axle stall, I could... do an axle stall and then come in like switch, tail stalls. I learned tail stall revert out in Mexico. Out in South America somewhere. I think it was Bolivia last year. Transition game, because we didn't really have much transition. Wasn't really there. But I like a mani pad these days. That's what I was going to say about this. So this is the first time I entered the Unicorn Jam. I didn't even place because I just got back into skateboarding.
Yes, and then I was telling me that.
And then the second year, I wanted to go in the beginners again because technically it was like the second year being back. And I'd had a year of skateboarding and everyone argued it and was like, you can't come in the beginners. So they chucked me in with The only person I can remember was Steph Nerding, because I think she kick-flipped off the Toblerone thing that year. And this doesn't have a number on it, but I think I came second. And me and my friend, my best friend from Somerset, had come from Lovebox. So we were...
Lovebox Festival.
We were absolutely mashed and hungover from like the worst stuff imaginable. Don't do that stuff anymore. And she took some video on her phone of me, because she wasn't a skater. She was just there waiting for a bus back to Bristol. And in the commentary, so I go up on the like Toblerone thing, and the guy's like, backsmith on the Toblerone. It wasn't a backsmith. I've never done a backsmith. I had a wobble. Like, I think I went to like back 5-0 it and had a wobble into like Smith and just managed to like stay on. So I think that's why I placed where I did, because they thought I did a backsmith, but really I just accidentally fell into it by accident. But I don't know. Anyway, yeah, it is what it is.
I've got footage from one of those jams. I wonder whether you're in it. I wouldn't be surprised, because I filmed. I went along and filmed.
It'd be so interesting, because I don't really have much of me.
I'm going to look later.
From that era. Best thing to skate was the question, but anyway, that was a long answer.
That was a good answer. What, with Keep Rolling and filming, what's your background within filming? Because I think that's something that you mentioned with the Skateboard GB at the weekend, and it's super good that you're involved in that.
Yes. So my background is actually... my main role for 5 years was the senior studio technician for ITV Daytime, which sounds really technical, but it's not. It's more of an assistant role. And
you're playing yourself down.
You assist cameras, sound, lighting. And yeah, it's really good. It's the daytime. So it's, well, day. I don't know why they call it daytime. The first show's Good Morning Britain, which is like 3 a.m. start in for 4 a.m. So really early.
So you're getting up for that?
Yeah, I used to. 5 years, religiously, 3 a.m. starts. I didn't have much of a life. But then I went freelance. But just before I joined ITV, I was a camera operator on Big Brother. Everyone knows Big Brother. So they had a great trainee department where they did it in grades. So people fresh out of uni could go in as a grade 5 operator. Wicked. And you just work your way up the grades. And yeah, so broadcast is my main thing. Live streaming, live events. My ideal dream would be one day to work on like X Games or SLF's live feeds, preferably vision mixing, directing. But you know, I'd take a camera job, I'd take a sound job. I see where they place their microphones sometimes, like there's a little radio mic like on the last step or something to pick up the sounds, or taped under by a rail. And I think that's quite particular, because not many people, when they watch it, would be looking at like the microphone placement. But yeah.
What kind of cameras are you using for like broadcasting? I'm super interested in this stuff. At NAS.
Yeah. So this is so great. I got this to shoot documentaries abroad because it's so light. And I do have an adapter for a wide angle, but it's not that wide, so I rarely put it on. But what I really like is like being far away and like going on the zooms and the pans, because it's so smooth. The zooms and the pans, because when you've got a DSLR type camera and you've got a lens, and I do have a Sony a7 III as well, but if you're zooming in on lenses, you know, it's like clunk clunk clunk, and the camera microphone picks it up. So This is my baby, and it's so cute.
I remember you telling me at NAS exactly that. You were like, what are you using? I'm like, a DSLR. And you were like, how on earth are you managing to get the zooms not looking awful? I would love to afford a cinema camera with zoom. I would absolutely love to afford that.
Yeah.
They're expensive.
I did look the other day because I was curious, and this has held its value so well. So I got this like pre-COVID for about £2,099 secondhand, and it's still trading at around £2,600. And that's really rare for cameras, because you know, like a year after a camera's released, it's like dog shit and it's not worth anything anymore.
It just drops.
Yeah, unless it's a VX1000.
So with your camera stuff, what I meant was, what cameras were you using with the Big Brother?
Oh, no, they're PED cameras. Yeah, like they're called like Grass Valley or Sony's. They're like they're on
Okay.
PEDs, like gassed PEDs, and they're really big with big telephoto kind of lenses. And you have like little handles with a zoom and a focus,
No
but because
way.
they're all plugged in via cables, so there's actually a racks person that will do all of your exposure for you.
No
So
way.
yeah, in television, I like to think camera operators for broadcast like PED stuff or daytime stuff have it quite easy because it's mainly so they're really qualified people, but their focus zoom and the lighting and everything is and sound is controlled by other people. Whereas, as you know, as like a videographer, when you go out to events, you're doing sound, you're doing the white balance, you're doing
If
the
you,
boom
yeah.
so and everything all by
Unless
yourself.
you've got it on auto, unless you've got it on,
Yeah, then
and then you're a loser. And it's interesting you say that because I am someone who gives myself way too much to do. And usually with what I've done over since 2015 is it's like the Little Britain thing. Write the theme tune, sing the theme tune. I literally would be like vlogging style, interviewing, having to check the sound, having to check the camera, everything. And I was only
Yeah.
speaking to Tim 2 weeks ago, who runs Flatspot magazine, and he's like, "Man, Woody just gets in front of the camera and interviews, and that's all he does." I'm like, I have to do everything. Edit.
Yeah.
It's incredible. It takes so much time. What is your roles within Keep Rolling? Do you have different
We
tasks?
are what do you call it? Co-directors, co-creators. I'm trying to push more. So Aurore's got her like PT qualification. She's doing a thing with Nike on how to support teenage girls with their mental well-being.
Brilliant.
And she does like the yoga and stretching side of things. She's also very good with a camera. And I'm trying to push photography on her because she is a great photographer and trained or studied as a photographer. Because people think people who can film can take photos, and in my case, it's not the case. Like, the framing's different, and yeah, it's not what I'm amazing at. So for me, yeah, it's like filming and interviewing, editing, a lot of organizing. I'm in charge of like the bank account and sending the invoices if we're getting paid for anything, which is very rare. Aurore started applying for grants as well, so that's taken the pressure off me. I think that sums it up. South
Nice.
America is difficult to edit because we didn't go to South America with the aim that we were going to make a documentary series. So the first couple of episodes are going to be a bit rough because we were filming loads of vertical for reels because we were trying to like be down with the kids. I even think we started a TikTok, which just fizzled. But yeah, we were all vertical, and now I'm just like, why did we film in vertical? Because if you film in horizontal, you can always make it vertical, but you film in vertical, you can't make horizontal. So it wasn't until like a couple of months in, like, girls started asking Aurore, like, oh, what's going to happen with this like footage? And Aurore started saying like, oh, maybe we'll make a documentary. And I'm like, rrr, rrr, because we're like
It's all
drowning in footage.
vertical.
But yeah, it's unfortunately it's taken ages, but I have almost finished episode one. And as I said, it's rough, but at least let's just get this footage out there because we met these girls and it doesn't have to be perfect. And if people want to go travel from Mexico down to Argentina and they want to know where the girl groups are to find their friends, then yeah, it'll all be there, on YouTube.
I'm looking forward to seeing it. And I think that's something that I learned from going to the Unicorn Skate Jam and seeing Danny film. And dare I say, I think I had this egotistical, I'm going to turn up and like, I'm going to be inclusive and film the girls skating. And then I realized actually like yourself and Danny are already doing that. And it's one of those things where like getting
Yeah,
you involved in this is
wasn't so. Don't feel bad.
yeah. Oh,
But this,
it
yeah,
was
you
it.
can't
It
help
was a
yourself.
learning curve. It was a learning curve. You've got to be invited to these things, I think. And Danny was super nice. I
Yeah.
got some footage. I made a nice little video out of it. And I think that the arrogance, I got myself taken down a peg or two and realizing that it's supporting, not going in and being like, oh, I'm gonna cover this. I'm gonna cover this event. Because there was some really good coverage. See, and he said, see. Yes. Yeah. Definitely. But I think that's why it's...
Don't have enough.
I think that's why it's so good and so important that, like, I absolutely love what you do. I'm constantly following it on Instagram. And it's that ability that you've got... You're pushing it within filming and you're going around and you're similar to me. You're going around and traveling and seeing the different crews. And I think that's like super, it's super interesting. Yeah. And it's super important as well. And I can't wait to see that documentary that you will release. Have you gone to any TV companies with it?
Oh yeah, no, it's definitely not there. No.
No?
No, and I think that for copyright issue and having to get like the release forms of all the girls and stuff,
yes.
I think it would be such a ball ache. But I have seen stuff on Netflix, like there was a guy that cycled around the world and his video was like really rough. Like it was definitely more than possible to achieve like his, what do you call it, like standard yes. image quality. But yeah, it's better to kind of be more unofficial without sponsorship and stuff so that, yeah. But saying that, Doyen Skateboards did give us like 300 quid so that we could buy the girls like lunches and stuff while we were out there.
That's awesome.
And then we had this awkward thing where like we'd be trying to pay for lunch and they'd be kind of getting offended. And we're like, no, like, this is the only fund we have like to buy you. Because it is like you're asking a lot from people. You turn up and you want to film with them. And a lot of them, like they go above and beyond driving us around on their motorbikes, taking us like the best street food, showing us the spots. And that's their time, and time is money. So
it's what I found here.
At least let us buy you some drink.
I almost feel like it's a cultural difference. I find it in Mexico, if you want to offer things, they almost feel offended. It's like, no, yeah, we can do this. We don't need your like white ass helping us.
Yeah, we recently went to Southeast Asia and we didn't have any funding for that to buy people drinks and food, but we did try to at least pay our way without offending people.
Yeah.
But at the same time, like what I want to say to them with the language barrier is me and Aurora are like well into our 30s. Like most of the time we're meeting like young people in their sometimes 15-year-olds, which is why we need to do this filming now, because they'll get to a point where it's not acceptable for us to be like contacting children and asking to like hang out with them in their local skate spots. But yeah, we're in our 30s. You know, some of them, they're having their first job at the local skate park or something. We're just more mature, you know. We've done our grafting and we've saved some money. So don't feel bad about it.
So you've just been to Asia?
Yes.
And yeah, were you filming for the documentary for that as well then, in mind? Or just...
Yeah, we were thinking now we got more of an idea, so we can definitely do a follow-on series. So... We haven't Wicked. Really got a name for it, but I keep calling it the Girl Skate Guide 2. So then we'll just change the name. So Girl Skate Guide 2, Mexico, Central and South America, Bolivia, Vietnam. And so it's kind of like a guide for anyone that wants to go skateboarding and traveling. You know, where did we fly into? What are the touristy things to do while you're there? But also where will you find skateboarders if you look for them? Yeah. If you don't know any.
Will, did you cover like the safety aspects of it? Because I know you told me a story that was kind of scary was it El Salvador?
Ooh, we got screwed up in El Salvador with the flights.
You had a phone pinched from you.
Panama.
Oh, was that Panama? Like,
pinched. Panama's a really weird city. It's like super rich and then like super poor. And you can be walking through streets and one minute you'll be in like the really nice area and then the next street is just like a do not go there. And we'd been walking, so we spent like all morning skating, and like one guy had said to me like, Panama is super safe, nothing bad's ever happened to me. It's just like the irony, because people get their phones pinched in London in exactly the same way, so you know it happens everywhere. But we were super tired trying to go to the next spot to meet the next girl, and we were walking down these like streets and stuff, and someone had even shouted out the window in Spanish like, you shouldn't be here. And once we got that happened in Mexico a lot, once we got out of that area, we thought we were clear and we were like walking towards the city center. And we just as we crossed the street, I'd had my phone out on like a lanyard to look for the directions. And normally I'd tuck it in under my top and I'd forgot. It was just dangling there, you know, it was just saying, come take me. And a guy came up to me and just started yanking on the lanyard and it took ages to break. Oh. And in that time, like, I had no idea what was going on because I forgot that my phone was even there. So Aurore thought he was wrestling for my skateboard. And I'm like, what the hell's going on here? And then as soon as I felt like the release of it, like it did eventually snap. Yeah, it eventually snapped off. Was that being yanked? What's happening? Que pasa? No, I don't know. And then he just like ran off and I started chasing him and I was like,
you were chasing him?
Yeah, I started chasing him. And Roar was like, come back. And I remember like seeing like some like weird kind of guy on the street, like lying down, and some, I like said to a guy, like, stop him. And the guy like let him run past. And I went back to the street corner where it happened and I looked around me because there was like some shops and, you know, people are always outside their shops and on the street and they're street vendors. And I looked around at everyone's faces that were looking at me and there was no love in, like, we were in the wrong area. There was nobody came and asked, like, are you okay? Which is not the response that we'd had from like all the other places. People we'd met. So we were clearly in the wrong place. And that was really surprising. And then like literally 20 seconds down the road, we found two police officers on a corner and we were like, someone just stole my phone and he went down there. And they were like, we're not going down there. That... We filed a report and you could see on the iPhone phone tracker that he was exactly back where he was when he took the phone. He never moved. He just kept in that location. But they were like, it's too dangerous for us to go and recover a phone. Like, I had insurance, so it was fine.
With regards to like danger, I feel with your point about London, it's so on point because I always feel far more, and I don't know whether it's a language barrier and maybe I just don't understand, but I always feel far more like sketched out in the UK, especially when you're in the wrong place at the wrong time and you've got someone that you instantly know could be a threat. It's literally my last weekend in Mexico and it's been plain sailing for like 6 months. And then literally I was in Yanine's barrio. And yeah, there was this guy, luckily nothing happened, but there was this guy, unfortunately being white in Mexico, you stand out like a sore thumb, especially when you're in the wrong place. And there was this guy just
taken you for being American, which is also
all the time. I get so annoyed. Gringo. It's like, I am not American. I've got a sense of humor. Anyway, I'm just joking for the American listeners. Don't feel offended.
Yeah.
But yeah, this guy, he just wouldn't leave me alone. First of all, he was asking for sweets. And I think the stranger, I knew he was like either drunk or on something. So I was being polite and being nice. And I just remember he was like asking for money for sweets and I had nothing on me. So the only danger I had was actually being physically assaulted. And it was really strange because I pulled out my pockets and I was like, I've got nothing on me, mate. And it was almost like he was offended. And then he just switched. It was so strange that something like that would switch him. But he was almost annoyed that I was like this white person in their barrio with no money. And like... It was almost insulting. Yeah. And thankfully he was okay. He kept asking strange questions and being generally like a weird person in the UK that you tend to meet every now and again. And then he suddenly switched and we were just getting chips. And we literally, as we were getting the chips, he walked past and said something to Yanine. And I didn't know what he said. And I said to Yanine, what did he say? And he was like, I know where you live and I'm stealing your keys. And I was like, oh, great. Okay. And then we still had to walk down this like alleyway to get back to her place. And I'm not going to lie, it was quite terrifying. And that's something I've traveled a lot as well. And that's something that I think I've found. Would you say that traveling as a female in certain places is more dangerous or you get looked at more than if you were like a male?
I think especially where we were in Mexico, we were kind of oblivious in this nice naive bubble because people like a taxi driver, we might decide, oh, we're not going to walk because we walk everywhere. And that was the thing with Panama where we thought instead of walking we should have just hopped in like a taxi. It would have cost us like £1 and we wouldn't have gone through this place, but we loved to just walk everywhere because it's the best way to see places. But wait, what was your question again?
My question was, do you think it's different for a female traveling than a male traveling. Because one of my first experiences with opening my stupid, ignorant man brain was I met a girl in Palestine, of all places, and I suddenly thought, would this be a place where my sister could do what I could do, to put it like as politically correct as I could? And I thought, actually, no, like culturally it is very different.
Yeah, I'm going to say I've got two points for that. I do see solo female backpackers, you know, when we're backpacking, and I do absolutely honor them, because it's not just like the thing about being a female, but when you're at a bus station and you need to go to the toilet, you know, you've got no one to look after your bag and stuff like that. So when you travel in a two, like I travel with a Roar, it's really, really useful. You mentioned El Salvador earlier, so I'm going to go back to that. So we weren't going to go to El Salvador in South America, because we'd watched all the Vice documentaries, which will tell you that it is like the most unsafe place for women, the amount of violence against women. Wow. They say nothing positive about it for women as a place to go. And they also say, you know, it's got a history of the dictatorship and whatnot. So we weren't going to go there. And then we found this group. We'd heard about this group called Namaskate Club, run by Andrea. And it was just such a juxtaposition. They were like surfing babes. They're the most gorgeous women, their bikinis with their surfboards and their surf skates, having this great sunny time. And you just thought, what? Like, this isn't what I've been sold as an image. So we crossed Honduras by bus to get there, which is about as well, but nothing happened to the bus because apparently the buses get like hijacked. And I'm sure, well, I don't know why I did this. It's a thing. Apparently it happens. And we were so nervous about going there that Andrea was great. She picked us up in her car, like practically from the airport. Many people did really similar things in our travels. And so I think we owe a lot safety wise to the skate community for looking after us and making sure we didn't go like to the shore. They put us in a taxi to get home.
Was Andrea a local El Salvador?
Yeah, local. Right. Yeah. So, yeah, she's a weird one because she looks like she's not from there, but she is. She even said to us, like, people would, I don't know, be going to try to charge her, like, tourist rates for taxi and stuff, because they get a lot of tourist surfers there. Mm. There's a little coastal surf community. Apparently, it's really good. But, yeah, that was just so ironic. Such a juxtaposition. And there's one other time I did travel alone to the Philippines. Aurora came and met me for a bit of it, and I was supposed to have another friend called John. He's a London skater. He was supposed to come out and meet me, but he hurt his back. And luckily, because he has some money, we were staying in a really nice, like, two-bed apartment in Manila City. And so he said I could keep the apartment to, like, stay there so, you know, I'm safe. And it did have a gun, like a guy with a gun on the door. So I remember one day I went to this skate park in the ghetto and I met the Tondo skate crew, and they were so cool. They looked after me. It was all great. And we skated together until, like, it was dark. And then they were like, oh, how are you getting back? And I was like, oh, just, you know, try like the buses or whatever. And they were like, oh, no. And this guy who was a police officer was literally like pointed at one of the boys. His name was like Almar, I think. So shout out to him. Still got him on Facebook. And he was like, you're taking her home. And we talked on like Google Translate, and where I got like a little tuk-tuk and a bus there, it was actually like kind of almost like three buses across the city to get back. And it was like, I don't know, midnight or 1 a.m. and it stopped in the market. And during the day, the market was great.
Heaven, yeah.
And at night, we were like, we had, so the bus stops weren't the same one. It was like the other side of the market. And I remember going down this alley and there was just this woman covered in blood, like like screaming, like on her knees, like with her, like, you know, half naked. There was only a little bit of blood, but, you know, in the dark, like on the floor, like screaming out at us. And I was like, oh, like, you know, and he just kind of took me and like shuffled me past. I don't even know if he'd remember that, but obviously as a tourist, that was like a little bit shocking. And then I couldn't find it in the street. And eventually we got to the apartment can't go back like with all those buses now. Like, it's ridiculous taxi for him. But he said that his like relative lived nearby, so he was going to go there. So then I turn up to the apartment with the arm off, and obviously he's thinking a bit like, this girl looks a bit rough. She's staying here, but then obviously, like, I guess I'm white, so he kind of lets me. And I went to the wrong door, and I've got my keys, and I'm like, oh, that's the wrong door, and I'm like, oh, that's my door. And then I look, and he's like looking around the corner, like, to make sure, I guess, that, like, I don't know, that I actually was staying there, or, but great security. So yeah, that is my absolute shout out to the skate community in the Philippines and worldwide. They've kept us safe.
It's super refreshing to have the belief that the skateboard community will take care of whoever when they come to their country. I found that the same, whether it's Europe or even being in Mexico, they really do look after you. I remember the first time I was here, and I kept my card in between the phone and my case. In the end, sorry, I've just messed up the story, because I was pulling out my phone with my debit card in my pocket, and it just kept falling on the floor. And this was the first day I was here, and I was here with TJ. TJ was like, "Man, what are you doing?" And I was like, "What do you mean?" He was like, "You need to keep that card safe." He's like, "You keep dropping it, it's going to be stolen." And it's, yeah. I was like, "Oh wow!" And it's one of those things where you, with a local community, they usually tell you where to go, where's safe to go, like where's not. And I think that for me especially was a little bit of an eye opener for Mexico. Although I do feel everywhere's dangerous, and I do feel that I know Pontus got a taxi to Fishbone, the vert ramp, when I first got here in November, and I feel that, like, the taxi driver was saying to Pontus, this area is really sketchy. This area is really sketchy. And I just remember thinking,
they always do.
Yeah, I just feel that, I just feel like you could be in the nicest area, no matter where, like in London, you could be in the nicest area, but you've got the wrong people at the wrong time, and something's going to happen. And it's the same vice versa. So I find it interesting that they're always warning you that it's like, it's dangerous. And I just think the world is a dangerous place, and you've just got to be aware of it. That's why I'm going to go full circle back to my original question, was with your documentary stuff, have you covered any of that, or is it more of like a sideline thing? Because it is kind of a negative thing within travel, I think.
Yeah. We did some interviews with some of the girls in some other places where the government is obviously a little bit like, but I remember in El Salvador having to just record audio because they obviously don't want to be on camera speaking out against the government. We have such free speech here. We just don't know like what the repercussions are for people in other countries. And so, but whether, that's so far down the line, whether I'll use any of it in a tasteful way. I had a great interview with a skater's mum who talked about the Saddam Hussein regime. And in it, she was saying that now with the generation below, that girls and boys can play with each other and can be with each other. And you know, there aren't all these strict rules regarding religion. And she spoke so well, and I really wanted to use it. And then her husband watches it and is like, absolutely not, can't be used. So there is that irony where it's like they like to think, or they're trying to have more women's rights, but in reality the husband's going to have the last say, and he's not going to have his wife talk about the Saddam Hussein regime that killed her father, and about women and boys being, oh, it's fine for the teenage girls to go, you know, off with the teenage boys. So yeah, there's feeling it, and then there's actually being on camera and vocalizing it. And in some places, they're not quite there yet.
You've got to be super careful.
But it's good to experience. Yeah. Yeah. One of my first videos when I went out with Skate Pal the first time in Palestine, they're cringy to watch. They're like these little vlogs of my time. And I was so naive. I knew nothing about the conflict to what I know now after being like there 3 or 4 times. And in the intro to one of my videos, one of the mums again had taken her hijab off and put it on me.
Oh, yeah.
It's great. And I'm in the camera and I've got like the headscarf, and they're all, because, you know, I'm kind of one of them. And I put that video in, and the kids, like, as soon as I put it on YouTube, the kids were like messaging me on Facebook, grandma, very, very angry, very, very angry. I just delete immediately because, you know, this woman has gone a whole married life with nobody seeing her without her, you know, headscarf on. And I was about to jeopardize all of that. I hope, you know, that I got there in time and grandma would not be so angry that the video has gone. But it was like frame and in the background, because I'm like now wearing the scarf and in the background, you can just about see that she's not wearing her scarf anymore. It's my house of Anne's picture. So yeah, I've definitely learned a lot about respecting other people's religions, traditions, cultures. Because I do see a lot of skateboarders go to like West Bank and they got their tops off and shit and stuff like that. And they don't get it.
Yes.
Yeah.
With your camera gear, when you were going through security, I did Skate Pal as well. And I think I've been wanting to do a mature way of putting this across to people because it's such a volatile situation and how quickly you can be called names. But I have never experienced such ignorance and hate as I did when I went through the security wall. What's the town that's completely surrounded by a wall?
Begins with a Q.
Qalqilia.
Qalqilia, yeah.
Qalqilia. I went through Qalqilia.
It's a rough checkpoint.
And it's funny because in everything I've read online, they always say, don't let someone take your passport away from you. Always make sure you've got your passport on you. If they need to like see it, they can do whatever they want to in front of you. I had my passport taken off me at the Israeli security for about 15 minutes. And I was like, I haven't got my passport. I don't know what's going to happen. And I don't know what they were doing to it. You know, I find it very, very suspect that they took my passport for 15 minutes without my permission, without, you know.
Yeah.
Oh, I say without my permission. I think he said, can I just quickly go and photocopy it? And I thought, yeah, it's going to take you 2 seconds. And it 15 minutes. I don't know what they were doing, whether they've got really slow scanners in Israel. I'm making a joke because on top of that, when I left the airport, this lady checked my MacBook, and it was a really old 2008 MacBook. My friend managed to make me drop it, and it had cracks and stuff. And the
did it have a sticker on it that said
stickers everywhere? What was that?
That really roll that says like "Bomb Hills, not countries." Oh, I think I had it once on my MacBook Pro. They don't like that sticker.
I didn't know. It was all skate stickers. But she was looking at it like this in front of me for ages. And then I went to open it because I was like, what is she doing? So I went to open it like, oh, here's like the inside. Like you can look at it. Like, I'm just trying to help. She was like, we have MacBooks in Israel too. And I was like, okay. So like, I didn't say anything
more. I thought
you were
going to say they freaked out.
No.
Experiences where they flip shit over like the most simplest stuff.
I was going to go on and say, did you have any... She just left it. And in the end, after all that, she left the laptop on the desk and didn't say anything to me. Just left it on the desk. And I remember being like, I was waiting there for 2 minutes. Like, she's going to say you can take your laptop. No. And then I was like, excuse me, can I grab my laptop? She was like, of course. And I was just like, right, you're just testing my patience. Yeah. It's fine. But yeah, how did you find that?
They kept putting it through the x-ray. They kept asking if the lens comes off. I was like, the lens does not come off. That same time, like just by chance, we'd been to northern Iraq before flying there. And because there's a skate park in the Kurdistan kind of Iraqi region. And Aurore's mum had given me a pink neck pillow and it had a unicorn horn on it, a unicorn hood. Unicorn. And we'd taken the unicorn hood off. And there was obviously then like a hole in the neck pillow, which one of the, I think the mums in northern Iraq kindly sewed up for me. And if you explain that to the Israeli authorities, that this neck pillow that they've noticed has been opened was sewn up by someone in Iraq, they will literally flip shit. And they'll keep you there for hours and it's just really awkward. But the first time I was coming out of West Bank with Ray from Keep Pushing, we'd been to the Dead Sea and Ray had collected Dead Sea mud in a 2-liter bottle, which had like stones in it. And we went through the scanners in that checkpoint that you mentioned that you shouldn't really go through.
Calcutta.
They don't like you using that one. and they thought it was a bomb, and they sent alarms, people with armed guns. They put Ray into like a mini prison and placed the bottle in the middle of the room like it was going to self-destruct. And then they put me in the mini prison. And then about 10, 15 minutes later, after they've checked it and everything, they come back and they let us both out. And they're like, oh, sorry, we've just never seen anything like that before. But they pressed a button, like they pressed a button, a panic alarm. People came in to look at the screen and people freaked out. So yeah, I'm not keen on that, but I do have to say I've got lots of friends in Israel, in Jerusalem. The Jerusalem skater girls have been brilliant with us. Though it's always really difficult with the conflict because our government doesn't help. No government helps, and it's just really bad. It's just a bad situation.
I was 3 weeks in Israel and the West Bank, and I spent a week in a hostel because I was like, you've got to see it from both sides. And I think from my privileged not having to deal with the hatred from both sides, I was just like, this is really sad, because I'd been skating with the kids in Palestine and super welcoming, really nice. And then I'd gone to the other side and I went down to the Tel Aviv skate park. And I got a photo. They all wanted to get a photo of me. And I just remember thinking, like, it's so sad, because it's not an isolated thing just in Israel and Palestine. There's lots of these kind of conflicts around the world because of whatever reason. And I just think it's so sad. It's like a human trait that we manage to, it's like a mirror image. And we seem to manage to mirror our hatred for each other. And that was something that I found sad, is I was able, with my privilege, to see both sides, to be treated nicely from both sides, and also experienced the security, which did upset me a little bit. And my bag, when I got back to London, I'd bought a padlock, no padlock to be seen, and a little card saying, we've searched your bag. And it's just like,
of course,
seriously?
They're really paranoid.
Yes.
Yeah, so they take security. I live in a really Jewish area. It's really safe, but all the schools have security here for obvious reasons. I remember getting the local bus, the kind of Jewish bus to, I think it goes to a settlement inside of the West Bank, which I'll just say again, I hate all of these illegal settlements that popped up, but it meant I had to get off the bus. Otherwise I was going to go into a Israeli settlement and be stuck in there. So I got off just as it crossed the wall and the checkpoint. And then I had to walk for ages with a few Palestinian people because the taxi drivers can't come because they get, there's so many instances where they've just been shot or blown up. So the taxi drivers are too afraid to go there. So you have to literally walk yourself into the West Bank away from these, you know, the checkpoints.
When I got dropped off at Qalqilya checkpoint, exactly the same thing with a taxi driver. I got dropped off probably like half a kilometer from the checkpoint. And I was like, can you not go up there? And he was just like, no, we don't go up there. And I was like, far out.
Understandable.
Yeah, exactly.
The biggest heartbreaker for me was like the first time I left someone saying like, say hi to the sea, because his dad's generation like could go to the seaside. That's literally the other side of the wall, Tel Aviv. That's just, we're very privileged. And we can only do what we can do.
On a flip side of this, what's been your favorite, what's been your favorite experiences with traveling?
Definitely one of the best highlights for us was Bolivia. Because we messaged the Emila skate girls, who are like kind of celebrities from the National Geographic magazine. And we thought they were going to ghost us because they'd done so much stuff, like so much high profile stuff, that we didn't have any money to like pay them to like come meet us. But
they
did.
The New York Times,
and
weren't they?
They were. Yeah, in everything. And they were shooting for like some Argentinian magazine or something. So they had a minibus where they were going around to like skate spots, and they just rang us up on like the second or third day after we met them, and they were like, where are you? We're coming to get you, like we got a minibus and you're gonna come with us. And so we hopped in their minivan, and like they'd get out, and this, you know, this film crew would like fly a drone over them as they're like skating down the road. We're like, oh my god, like we're here. And they've got their, you know, their traditional skirts, and
that's what I was going to say, yeah.
Just, I love llamas, man, and just alpacas and things like that. And obviously that's kind of what Bolivia is, high altitude.
Of course. Yeah. Is there any flat spaces for skate parks then? Because if it's like...
They've got a massive one on top of a... Like, it's supposed to be like the highest skate park of Skate Life, and there are hundreds of volunteers that went out to build it. But, and I was really looking forward to that park. And I could understand that it's different, and for a creator, you need a couple of days to kind of give lines, because it is really rough and DIY. And I think they gave, like, oh, you're all from France, like, you go over there and design that bit, and you're all from, like, that bit. And maybe they had a few too many drinks, smoked a bit too much weed, and so in terms of it all tying in together. But then that's also the beauty of it, because why should you always have these symmetrical skate parks that aren't like, don't have like crusty corners and stuff like that? You know, why do they have to be silky smooth and symmetrical? So I can see it from both things. But for me, I had like a bit of altitude sickness, a bit of heat, like sunstroke when I was there. And I was like, this park's a killer, man. Like, there's no beginner friendly stuff here. It's like skate and die. Like, it's like a thrasher mag. You can imagine them just setting fire to it all. And yeah, that's La Paz. And there were also some other places. I've gone on a tangent.
Which
we do follow Make Life Skate Life around a lot. And
which park was it that you had the accident in?
That was Argentina in Cordoba, and that was it looked like a very nice skate park. But we had some bearing problems where we were going in the, our boards were going in the holds of all the 19-hour buses, and mine were just crusted, like they weren't moving. So we put some oil in there. I don't know if this is a disclaimer for the insurance company that would make my insurance claim valid, because they did fly me back. But we put some oil in them, some very official bearing oil, from the Airbnb, and got to the skate park. And I was like, I'm just going to try and skate around as fast as possible to wear this into the wheels. And there was a little bump, and there was a crack right before the bump. And obviously I was going full pout towards it, and suddenly the board literally came to a stop and was stuck in the crack, and I flew over, pinged off like a cartoon character. Obviously not on the scale of who's the skater, not Nora, the other one, Meg Ashton to the side of it, Tony Hawk's,
Lizzie Armento
filming for Bird, Lizzie Armento. So the same terms of, she went to go up a ramp obviously, and then there was a point where she pinged off. It's the same kind of physics.
That
kind of the board stopped and pinged me off, and I just flew, and I kind of thought, oh, I should probably put my hands down, and I just went crunch, and the shoulder came in so much that it just like pushed all the bones, and it just snapped the end off.
Ow. Oh.
Argentina was the best place for an accident to happen, because it was free health insurance. And I think that's why our insurance company weren't too picky, because they didn't have to pay for the ambulance, the CT, the X-ray, anything.
That's amazing.
All I asked was, they said I might need surgery, I'd rather come home and see what they say. By the time I got home, got COVID, got to hospital, it all started to heal. Classic NHS. We'd have to re-break this all to straighten it up. But you seem to be coping all right with it. Let's just come back every week for an X-ray to see if it's like a floating piece of bone to see if it moves further.
Is it still okay, then? Move forward.
Yeah, it's a floating piece of bone that's formed its own kind of bone tissue and is just there, and it's a bit crunchy. But with the NHS, if you can move it, you're grooving.
I was trying not to get political, but like, it's amazing that Argentina's got a good medical health care, because ours is
amazing. I want to say it's almost better than ours. Like, if you have an accident, like they send an ambulance. The UK wouldn't unless you weren't breathing, you know? So yeah, I couldn't really move, and I was kind of like probably twitching a bit.
My first 2 weeks in Mexico last year, I saw a kid who was probably 15 years old, and it's been one of my worst things. I've seen a couple of these, and it's been one of my worst kind of wake-up calls, and why I've started to try and wear a helmet far more than I used to. Is I saw a 15-year-old, and you know that you've been to Lira, Parque Lira, and they've got that A block with a gap. And he was trying to 360 flip from the kicker to flat. So it's a big gap. And he's only about 15. Yeah. And he was doing these 360 flips. And I don't know what's worse. I didn't see him fall, but I saw the aftermath. And anyway, he did this 360 flip. He kicked the board away, and I've done this many a time, kicked the board away, landed underneath him, landed back on it, straight back, and all of the pressure went straight to his head. And he was probably having a fit with froth and all that for about 15 minutes. It was the worst thing I've witnessed within skateboarding with regards
people
to...
People say street skaters don't need helmets. And I look at like SLS now and I'm thinking like those rails, those gaps to rails they're doing, there's no way you can't justify that that is less dangerous than skating a concrete bowl.
Well, it's the age-old argument, isn't it? That like, oh, you can go out and have a car crash, or it's up to you. The helmet argument is another argument. But yeah, I saw that. True. And with regards to the healthcare and the ambulance, is I believe I'm not too into the politics of healthcare here, but I believe that it's very similar to America. And I remember the ambulance crew getting there and checking him out because he came to after about 20 minutes. And the guy was turning down an ambulance and hospital because it was going to cost, I think it was £500 to get the ambulance to the hospital. And I just remember thinking, man, and again, I try not to go too political, but I was just thinking, man, people don't understand how important our NHS and having a national insurance and something that's not non-corrupt and hopefully is getting funded correctly, which it isn't at the moment. You're turning down an ambulance because you might have a brain hemorrhage is insane to me. And I think that's something that, again, with travelling, you witness things like that.
Yeah.
And it's the balance of, like, you've got Argentina, which sounds amazing, and then you've got places like, and I'm going to go to the extreme of America, where it's capitalised so heavily that you're picking money over your actual health.
It's so true. It is crazy. I find that with healthcare as well while we're abroad. Obviously skaters are taking a lot of risks when they skate. It's another thing where people don't realize it, but even the NHS as it is now, we are still incredibly lucky, but we have to fight for it.
Exactly. This is what I keep saying to my girlfriend, is it's interesting times. I'm going to move on to the questions. I believe you've got a couple of questions. The first one in is Amy
Ram. My two questions.
Shout-outs to Amy Ram. I'm so pleased that we've covered a lot of travel in this, and cameras. I love cameras, so we've managed to cover a lot of what I've wanted to do here. Which country next, and for how long?
Oh, such a good question. If you asked Aurore, she would say Africa. Again, there's a lot. I'm not sure if it's Concrete Jungle or if it's Make Life Skate Life or organisations. They've built some amazing parts out in Africa. For me, it'd be Bhutan. It's like, you have to pay to get in. You have to pay every day you're there at least £200 now. And that doesn't include your guide. Used to include your guide, your accommodation and stuff. It doesn't include any of that. I think it's a guy called Johnny something. He went there many years ago from America and he died. I'm not sure how, but his family managed to get a skate park built in the Kingdom of Bhutan.
So that's a country. And I'm going to be really ignorant. Okay.
Yes, it's a country and they only let in a certain amount of people a year, and it's quite pricey to go there. And if Red Bull or Vans or anyone is watching this and they fucking go there with the team because I said it, then fuck you, because I'm going there first.
I thought you were going to end it with, please send some funding for a female-run media company, you mother.
Oh, shit, oh, if you want to fund us to go there, and we'll take a bunch of girl skaters, that's fine. But no stealing my spot.
So, I love that.
That was the wrong shout out. Delete the one before. Let's do a positive one. Yeah.
I'm keeping all that in. That was brilliant.
The problem is to film there, then you need a special filming visa, and that will probably cost like thousands of pounds. Unless, wink, you're not filming. Wink, wink.
That's for every country, I swear. Like, that was something that I was lucky with going through Kalkelia. He's like, I haven't got a filming permit. I've made a little documentary. And I was like, oh God, here we go. And they were fine about it, thank God. But it was something, you hear all the horror stories, and actually it was fairly, apart from
all of your
Exactly. Exactly.
Swallow them at immigration.
Swallow those SD cards. Next up, your second question. Duck D-tuck res? D-truck res?
Yeah. I think Portishead represent and in a blader. I've never met him, but one of my biggest supporters.
Oh, sweet.
Hopefully I'll meet him when the Portishead skate park opens.
Is Rachel going to try attend the new Portishead opening?
Hey, yes. Hey, Clevedon represent. I'll come down with a hammer and chisel and start trying to take it like a bike to Clevedon, but not further. Portishead's got a skate park after all these years. No, they deserve it. They've been waiting a very long time.
Well, Rachel,
got to end.
It's been a fantastic conversation. I've really enjoyed it. Yep. I'm so pleased that you've come on episode 13. Have you got any final thoughts, shout outs?
I've got my shouts out here. I've got my shout outs. I wrote them down somewhere.
You've actually got a sheet.
Yeah. I wrote Three Amigos Skate Shop, Christina at Night, Red Bull, Daisy Street, Amy Ram, Clown Board, Shiner Distribution. Those are people that have supported us in events in the. Thank you very much.
Was that Clown Skateboards?
Yeah.
Yeah, it cut out.
I'm sure there's more, but yeah, Clown. Yeah, go get that one in.
Yeah, they sent some boards to Morocco with Geordie, which is super sound. And I remember Clown Skateboards from when I was 14 and skateboarding, and Banksy wasn't a thing, and he was doing boards back then.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Now they're back.
Shout outs to Clown Skateboards. Yeah. Someone actually requested that I get the owner, and I don't know too much about Clown Skateboards, so I apologise, but get the owner on, because apparently they're a fountain of knowledge. Is it a fountain or of knowledge?
I can imagine so. I've never met them personally, but I know they have a whole like charity brand and they're just ethos. Doing community stuff. So we owe them for that.
We need that.
And apologies to anyone I haven't mentioned, but please still support any events we do.
Perfect. Thanks ever so much, Rachel. It was really last minute as well. So thank you ever so much for saying yes, coming on. We did have a little bit of a mix-up with the time difference. I'd said tomorrow in the day before in Mexico, but it was...
You went to bed. Still the same day here. Maybe see you at the Portishead opening.
I hope so.
Whenever that may be.
Thank you ever so much, Rachel, for your time. It's been a fantastic conversation. I've finally managed to talk to someone other than Tim about camera gear, editing and video production, and also traveling, because I'm a massive fan of traveling too. So thank you ever so much.
Thank you for having me.
Cheers. Finally, a conversation about camera gear and traveling. Fantastic conversation with Rachel. Keep rolling. Go and check them out on Instagram. Really, really good skateboard media channel, especially for the girls. Shout outs to Rachel. Thanks ever so much. Episode 13. Like and subscribe and follow whatever you do on Instagram. Instagram? Spotify. Thanks for listening.
Who you guys working for?
Who is this?
It's Skate Wine.
Oh, beautiful. Did you say Skate Wine?
Yes, sir.